presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control towers. CX-4 calling control tower, standing by.
Control tower, back to CX-4. Wind southeast, ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in. Yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode of the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
From time to time, the Army is giving airborne soldiers a chance to work directly with the Air Force on realistic assignments simulating actual combat. The object is an air-ground team working as smoothly as a well-drilled football 11, with each man doing his own job and each job adding up to final victory. Just 2 months ago, the Tactical Air Command and the 9th Air Force demonstrated the latest techniques in air-ground cooperation for more than 2,000 men representing all branches of military service. It was a realistic battle maneuver labeled Operation Combine at Lawson Field, Georgia. To start things rolling, officers in charge of the operation made up a situation that was a problem, just like you get in school. And it was up to the troops to solve it and come up with all the right answers. The problem said that an enemy army had landed in the southern part of the United States. After 4 months of fighting, the enemy had overrun Florida, Georgia, and parts of Alabama and South Carolina. Finally, the enemy was halted. He had overextended himself. And attacks of American air, ground, naval teams had seriously weakened his supply lines. Well, according to the problem, the front lines had remained the same for a period of 30 days. And that 30-day period had given our commander time to reorganize for a counterattack, and that was Operation Combine. The maneuver was so realistic, live ammunition was actually used, and mass formations of paratroops were actually dropped behind where the enemy lines were supposed to be. I'll have more exciting information about Operation Combine in just a few minutes, gang, so don't forget to listen. And now to our story. The mysterious Carlos Mendez, pilot of a Blanca monoplane which had been seen near every place where a bell from the carillon of Piranhas had suddenly lost its perfect tone, has finally come out into the open. Working quickly and with great daring, he stole the 10-ton bell which was hanging in the steeple of the Lakeville Town Hall. Then, to cover his trail, he ruthlessly killed the men who had innocently helped him. In our last episode, however, Mendez's actions struck home with shocking impact. Hop and Tank suddenly realized why Gail Nolan hadn't met them at their airport that afternoon. White-faced with horror, the young pilot thought back.
Mendez must have landed here if the truck and crane were found at the edge of the field, and he must have arrived sometime this afternoon when Gail was waiting for us.
Yeah, and he's a killer. If he's done anything to Gail,
No, wait a minute, boys. You may be jumping to conclusions.
How else can you figure it, John?
Well,
she would have been here unless Mendez did something to her or took her with him.
What about Aunt Agatha? Gail could be with her, couldn't she?
The house is just across the road. She'd have seen us and come out to meet us if she was there.
Let's go over anyway and talk to your aunt.
What's the use? You're whistling down a rain barrel, you know it.
Well, standing here with a crying towel isn't finding a tank.
Yeah, you're right. Let's go.
Well, that's better. Oh, wait.
Huh?
No sense all of us going. There's work to be done here.
What, for instance?
Now, that plane Mendez used. We've got to find out what kind it is.
How?
We can get a pretty good idea by its landing gear tracks, can't you?
Of course.
Then I wish one of you would check the runway and that edge of the field down there where the truck and crane are. There's still enough snow on the ground to pick up tire tracks.
I'll do it. But you get on over to Aunt Agatha's fast.
On our way, Tank, and thanks.
Let me know if you find out anything.
We won't be long. Come on, Hop.
Leading the way across the road to the house, the FBI agent tries to cheer Hop, but there is a hollow ring to his voice. Entering the house, they find Aunt Agatha about to leave and are completely surprised by her first frantic question.
Oh, Hop, have you found him?
What?
Found him?
Yes, Mr. Temple, have you? I'm so worried, I don't know what to do. There was no way to get in touch with
him. Wait a minute, Aunt Agatha. What are you talking about?
Chris, of course. He didn't come home for supper. Now it's way past his bedtime.
Great Scott.
Then you haven't seen him?
No, we just got back from town. I never thought that Chris might be...
Miss Knapp, when did you see him last?
Late this afternoon. He asked if he could go over to the airport. Something about a new plane in front of a hangar.
Did you say a new plane?
Yes, he was very excited about it. He said he'd never seen a pocket before and
he wanted to...
I think that's what he called it. Land sakes alive. Maybe that's Chris now.
Hop, why don't you take it? She's too excited.
Okay, I'll answer that, Agatha.
If it is Chris, tell him to come home at once.
Of course. Helen.
All right, Miss Knapp.
Yes.
Go on. Chris went to the field. What happened after that?
Nothing. That's just it. When he didn't come back for dinner, I called the office, but there was no answer.
You thought Miss Nolan would be there?
Of course. And now it's after 10 o'clock. Miss Mr. Temple, what shall we do?
What about Miss Nolan? Have you seen her at all or spoken to her?
No, not since this morning.
I see.
Well, we've got the plane all right. Ties in perfectly with what Aunt Agatha said.
Oh?
That was Tank. He described the tracks left by the landing gear. The plane must have been a Fairchild. A Fairchild packet.
Heavens to Betsy. Packet, pocket, what does it matter? I want to know what you're going to do about Chris.
We'll take care of it right away, Miss Knapp. Hop, let's get back to the office.
Yeah, but what about... I'll
tell you later. Come on.
What shall I do, Mr. Temple?
You'd better wait here, Miss Knapp, in case Chris went visiting. He may call you. Go ahead, Hop.
You'll let me know as soon as you find out anything?
Of course, and please don't you worry.
John, what was the idea of rushing me out? We didn't ask her about Gail.
I did.
And?
She hasn't seen Gail since this morning.
Oh.
I didn't want to worry her anymore. She's got enough on her mind with Chris.
John, do you think there's a tie-up? Both Chris and Gail missing, I mean?
Well...
And don't give me the routine about their visiting somewhere either. I don't believe it any more than you do.
From what you told me about Chris, and the fact that he saw the plane, I guess we'll just have to face it.
So Chris and Gail are both Mendez prisoners.
That's the way it seems to add up.
Yeah, but Mendez killed the other men, John. Why should he bother taking Gail and Chris with him?
There's no, evidence that he hasn't. So we'll have to work on that basis.
Work? Doing what?
Alerting the whole country. Spread a dragnet to cover every airport and landing strip. Mendez will have to come down sometime, and when he does, we'll have him.
John Temple is fairly confident as he leads the way back to the airport office and prepares to swing into action. But meanwhile, several hundred miles to the south, a large, ungainly, box-like plane lumbers across a cleared field and, gaining speed, finally roars into the air, heading due south. Leveling at 10,000 feet, the pilot turns the controls over to the stocky, powerful man seated behind him and, climbing down through the hatch, enters the cargo compartment, where he approaches a young girl bound hand and foot to a bucket seat against the fuselage wall.
Miss Nolan, I trust you are comfortable.
Oh, yes, very. Thank you for asking.
Your sarcasm is hardly appropriate. I was about to ask you if you'd care for something to eat or drink.
No.
The trip will be a long one.
Where are you taking me?
To my home in South America.
Why?
Oh, I really don't know now that you ask me.
You killed those men on the truck in cold blood. Why didn't you kill me?
The instincts of a gentleman, shall we say. I hesitate to harm a woman.
Strange you should be so sentimental after all you've done.
I can afford to be sentimental now, Miss Nolan. I have what I want, and there is no power on earth that can take it away from me.
You mean the bell?
Exactly.
Well, what's so important about the bell? Why have you gone to all this trouble to get it? Why have you killed for it?
That I shall tell you sometime.
You don't think you can get away with this, do you?
Think? My dear Miss Nolan, I am getting away with it.
Not for long. Why, the FBI probably knows every move you're making. The men at the last field where you refused will send in a report.
Ah, there you are wrong. There were no men at the last field. There was no field in the strictest sense of the word.
What do you mean?
I plan well, Miss Nolan, and very thoroughly. We landed in a cow pasture, part of an abandoned farm, where weeks ago I had stored a large supply of fuel. We were miles away from the nearest house. No one saw us land or take off. So there will be no report.
I wouldn't be so sure.
And even now, if you could look through the window, you would see that we are flying over water, the Gulf of Mexico. We have left the United States, Miss Nolan, and are far beyond the reach of the law.
Smiling in confidence, Carlos Mendez looks at Gail, now completely without hope, then turns abruptly and returns to the flight compartment of the giant transport. Left alone, Gail closes her eyes and listens to the drone of the engines, realizing that each revolution of the propellers is carrying her farther and farther away from help. We'll bring you the climax of today's episode in just a moment, gang, so stand by. A typical day's maneuver on Operation Combine at Lawson Field, Georgia, began at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. 12 jet-black invader bombers roared over enemy positions, strafing in elements of twos, as flak towers hurled live 50-caliber ammunition at them. Following the bombers came a lone Fairchild packet, loaded with a Pathfinder team. It was the job of this team to land, set up radar equipment, and send up colored smoke signals to pilots of 12 other packets carrying about 400 paratroopers into the combat area. A few seconds later, the first section of packets roared over, and the sky was soon full of colorful parachutes. Green for the men, and other bright colors for supplies and equipment. Fighter planes flew above the packets, serving as escort, supplying protection to the chutists as they floated to the ground. The sky soldiers dropped from the flying box cars were in action within a few minutes after landing, and it wasn't long before they were pouring shells into an enemy village. More equipment and men were then landed from gliders towed by packets, and from one of the gliders rolled a special radar jeep, which was immediately set up for action. As troops advanced on the village, P-51 and P-80 fighters dropped flaming bombs over the battlefield. The airborne troops made a final attack under cover of a heavy smoke screen laid down by low-flying fighters. The roar of bombs, the flash of rockets, all the noise ended suddenly as American troops swept into the town and destroyed all opposition. Such demonstrations as this are designed to give military men a basic understanding of cooperation, which is necessary for victory in modern warfare. Well, I've got to stop now, gang, but first let me remind you to make your lifetime career aviation. For always remember, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. 1 a.m., and on the rolling swell of the Gulf of Mexico, three powerful destroyers of the United States Navy all are conducting night maneuvers. In the radar plot of the lead destroyer, the operator suddenly concentrates on the grid before him, adjusts the dials, and then turns to his senior officer.
Lieutenant Bates.
Yes, Harmon.
I picked up something, sir.
Oh? Where?
A plane about 10 miles away. See it?
Yes.
Seems to be holding a southerly course. Shall I report it?
We're trying to simulate actual wartime conditions. Yes, shoot it to the radio room.
A few minutes later, a message is shortwaved to naval shore installations 100 miles away.
Report radar sight on aircraft flying at 10,000 feet, holding course south by southeast, position 100 miles south of coast. Aircraft unidentified, that is all.
The report, so vital to Hop and Tank, is passed through routine channels, double-checked against the schedules of airlines operating in the area, and then, after no identification is made, is sent to the Coast Guard and Border Patrol headquarters. Meanwhile, back in Lakeville, Hop, Tank, and John Temple keep a lonely vigil in the airport office.
Doggone it, when are we going to hear something? What's the matter with your men, John?
Well, they're doing the best they can, Tank.
John.
Yes?
Did you find out where Mendez got the Fairchild?
He stole it from a small charter line operating out of New City.
He sure gets the breaks, don't he?
He made most of them himself.
Phone.
Now, take it.
Gosh, Hop, Mickey.
Wait, Tank.
Hello? Yes, speaking. Uh-huh. Where? What time?
He's got something. Be quiet, will you?
You're sure it couldn't be any other plane? I see. Okay, we'll leave right away. And if you get any more dope, short wave to us en route.
Oh, boy.
Come on.
Well, John?
The Navy spotted a plane over the Gulf of Mexico. Sent in a routine report, and when it was checked, they couldn't trace the ship. So it may be Mendez.
For Pete's sake, why are we sitting here, then?
He's over 1,500 miles away, Tank. He has a tremendous lead on us.
Oh, we ain't going to cut it down hanging around here.
Suppose it isn't Mendez's plane.
No way of telling, Hop. But it's our only lead.
Okay, then. Let's roll.
Literally hurling himself out of his chair, Hop rushes to the door of the office, Tank and the FBI agent following close on his heels. Can they possibly make up the distance and help Gale? Gang, there's plenty of action ahead, so be sure to hear our next episode. Tune in and fly with Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. So long, Hop. We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine.